Hello there, welcome to the latest edition of The Front Page. And in a packed show this week, we will be looking at the UK general election and what its results might mean for horse racing, the showdown between Flutter and Arc, and perhaps the letdown that was City of Troy's victory in the Coral Eclipse. My name is Lee Mottishead, and I would love it if, while you're watching the programme, you could like, comment, share and subscribe. And I am sure my partners in crime in this week's show would love that as well. They are in our London HQ, Jonathan Harding. Good morning, Jonathan.
Morning, Lee.
You well?
Very well. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Wasn't that a lovely exchange? And at home in Ireland, after a nice weekend away, Richie Forrestal. How are you, Richie?
Not too badly, thanks very much. Yeah, didn't go far for the weekend, but I did go to Croke Park for the All-Ireland Hurling semi-final yesterday between Cork and Limerick, which was a great occasion. So back in the hot seat today now.
Was it a great occasion because you won?
It was a great occasion because Cork won, yes, but it was also an epic occasion as a spectacle, as it was earlier in the summer in the Munster Hurling Championship. They're two of the best teams we've seen in a long time, and they served up an absolute thriller. I have two daughters below still in bed who are yet to rise up. What are we, around 10:30 here, and I don't think they'll be getting up for a few hours yet. It was a long day, but a great day.
And does that mean you can get to the final as well? I mean, physically, you at the final.
There is a lot to be said for planning, isn't there, Lee? No. I am going on holidays the week of the final, which is rather unfortunate planning, so I won't be there. But just for those of you who follow it, it was the last time Cork played Clare in the All-Ireland Hurling Final was 2013, which went to a replay, which was the first replay in a very long time in an All-Ireland Hurling Final. So I'm kind of hoping if they don't win, it might go to a replay. We might get to the replay.
I wish you well. Okay, so we are going to start this week's show by going to Richie and talking about what happened at Sandown on Saturday, where City of Troy justified odds of 1-4 in the Coral Eclipse. But Richie, if you're watching him as an owner or a punter, you probably would have had some sweaty palms. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's fair, of course. Look, I mean, we're judging this horse ultimately to some extent on what has been said about him rather than what he is doing or has done. Michael Tabor last year compared him to possibly being cool Morris Frankel, I think was how he put it. And obviously Aidan O'Brien has given him the hard sell all year. He disappointed badly in the Guineas, and then he went and turned it around in the Derby, and obviously you roll on then to an Eclipse. Slightly unusual for Aidan to go for an Eclipse with a horse that's won a Derby, and great things are expected. It was an underwhelming visual display, there's no doubt about that, and he did lug a bit right, which you don't always like to see, but like there is kind of, when you step back from the expectation that was there beforehand and the hyperbole, if you like, you know, he has beaten the horses he had to beat. They were the ones closest to him. Al Riffa goes on soft ground. He won his Group 1 on soft ground, and it had got quite soft, and it was quite a demanding race. And Ghost Rider was third, and I don't think he's a bad horse. I think he's probably an improving horse. Maybe things didn't go his way in France, obviously, but I thought Saturday was maybe more like it. And they pulled nicely clear of the remainder. I still think he's a very good horse. I think we're probably being a bit harsh, and I'm maybe rushing to judge him a little bit. The thing I like about him, and it's common with a lot of the O'Brien horses these days, he raced handily. You know, he basically followed the pace, and it was, you know, it was a strong searching gallop set by Hans Anderson, as you know. There was no hiding place. They weren't looking just to secrete him home on soft ground. They put him out there to see what he was made of. And obviously he had to work to get the job done. There's no doubt it was a little bit underwhelming, but he did get it done. He showed good tenacity to do so. And when you look at his future targets, I think a track like York, they seem to be leaning a little bit more towards York than Leopardstown. A track like York with that long kind of yawning, galloping straight might suit his running style. And you look further ahead, there's so much talk about him going to the Breeders' Cup Classic to finish up there at the end of the year. If you want a horse who is going to be able to excel in those conditions, they race so hard on the dirt in America, and they have to be able to keep going. He looks like he has that attribute. Now, whether he will ultimately be good enough or not is a whole other ball game. But he looks like he has that kind of tenacious attribute, that ability to go hard and to keep going. which, as you well know, Lee, is what they do over there. You have to be able to go out, go hard, and you have to be able to sustain that. So whether he'll be good enough, as I say, is a whole other thing. But I think there are more positives to be taken from it than maybe initially seemed to be the case.
Richard, just two more questions on him. Do you believe he is as good as they think he is? I mean, we could put to one side the R. Frankel thing, because, you know, that was maybe said in the heat of the moment. But Aidan O'Brien clearly talks about him as though he thinks he's the best horse that they've had. John Magna was there on Saturday, but also Sue Magna was there. And there was no one trying to pretend that wasn't significant. It was her first time on a British racecourse in 12 years. They clearly think he is exceptional. Do you think he is as good as they think he is?
Well, first of all, wasn't it good to see John Magna interviewed and him come across so eloquently? I mean, I wish we had more of it. He was very colourful, and the phrase he used about him being in bed with the clothes off was very very funny, I thought. But is he as good as they think he is? Sure, I don't know. Look, I mean, clearly he isn't setting the world alight in terms of his performances. But it's early days. We're only into July. You would have loved White Birch to turn up on Saturday. You would have loved one or two others, but obviously the whole programme book, the way it's structured, with the Prince of Wales Stakes so close to this and the Irish Derby so close to this, they're all kind of compromised a little bit. And obviously White Birch's excuse was different. It was his blood. He wasn't there for that reason. But you would have loved more older horses to be there for a barometer, if you like. I don't know if he's as good as they think he is. As we know, they're not slow about talking up their stars. Most of the time they tend to deliver. And Aidan has been right to a large extent about this fella all the way along. But I'll kind of judge it by my own eyes over the course of time and the fullness of time, rather than going by what anyone else is saying about it, to be quite honest. Let's wait and see.
Yeah, I think that's a good answer. Bit of an odd question, this one then. So he could go, as you say, to York or Leopardstown next. Like you, I think that home straight at York, almost 5 furlongs, would be right up his street, absolutely perfect for it. But if they are right in saying they think it'll be York or Leopardstown and then on to the Breeders' Cup Classic ideally, if he did go to York, there would be a fair chance that he would end his three-year-old season having only raced once in Ireland when he won his debut start. Would that in any way factor into their thinking? Because we know, for example, that John Magna has always been very, very keen to support the Irish Derby. They made sure there were enough horses in the race this year, so it was a Whirlpool betting, a credible Whirlpool betting event. Would that in any way influence their thinking, do you think, that lack of competition on home soil?
Well, they've also always been huge supporters of the Irish Champion Stakes, as you know, Lee, and it is ultimately our best race. As you know, the Irish Derby has collapsed in its kind of profile. The Irish Champion Stakes is the one that's bang up there now. See the Stars only ran once in Ireland in his year, if I remember right. He missed the Irish Derby and won the Irish Champion Stakes. It would be lovely to see him more, but, you know, it's become a very international game, isn't it? And I remember not long ago I touched on the way in which Aidan's three-year-olds are not necessarily starting as strongly as they traditionally would have done. I mean, he has won none of the Irish or English guineas in recent years, or the French ones for that matter. And it looks like he's starting his campaigns, he's starting his horses' campaigns a little bit more gradually, and they're not quite peaking in early May. And that is partly because of this international element. There is the prospect of these horses going to places like America, obviously France as well along the way, and then staying in training as 4 and 5 year olds like Auguste Rodin and Luxembourg. We'd love to see the horse more, of course. We'd love to see him in Ireland, and he might yet run in the Irish Champion Stakes. You don't know.
Yeah.
It's still quite possible that he will. You don't know how plans will change. Maybe they will go off the idea of having a go at the Breeders' Cup Classic this year. And if that were to be the case, then maybe the Irish Champion Stakes would come into the equation again. And it's not that they've ruled it out, but you do get the sense that they're leaning towards York, don't you? So, we'll just have to wait and see. It would be nice to see him more, but it is what it is in terms of the programme at the moment.
Yeah. John, we were both there at Sandown on Saturday. when you get a Derby winner in the Eclipse, it's a big deal, and a lot of Derby winners have sunk in the Eclipse, unlike City of Troy. Did you sense there was a real sense of occasion about City of Troy running there on Saturday? In the sense, do you think he's got any sort of racing public mood yet?
I think he does, just purely anecdotally from being in the winner's enclosure after the race. It was absolutely packed, I mean, visibly so. There was a lot of people from Coolmore there, which would account for some of it, but there were people that seemed to be there just to get a glimpse of the horse in the winner's enclosure and around. It wasn't sort of those 2 days at Sandown, it didn't feel overly busy, but actually after that race, there was definitely a larger volume of people around the winner's enclosure. It was a slightly surreal atmosphere because of that slight pause in him coming in, and then it sort of didn't quite know what to do, and then there was sort of
just explain what happened there.
A bit of isolated clapping. He seemed to stop on the way, and we waited a long time for City of Troy to actually come into the winner's enclosure for whatever reason I didn't see. But the other horses had already left, and there's people sort of standing and waiting. So by the time he came in, he was sort of having to chart a course through a body of people, and then there was a sort of a delayed clapping him in. I think the performance as well was a little bit surreal. I think people kind of expect horses like him now to almost win running backwards, which probably isn't fair because it's, as John Magnus said after the race, it's no easy feat to win an Eclipse. Plenty of horses get beaten in that after running in the Derby. So, yeah, in answer to the original question, I think he's getting there in terms of star power. I remember speaking to Rod Street at Great British Racing, and he said unbeaten horses are particularly popular. And usually when they've won 10 starts is kind of the sweet spot when they really start to resonate. So he's not quite in that kind of Frankel category, but he's clearly a horse people want to see.
Richie, sadly we won't be seeing the Oaks winner anymore this year or again, which was a real disappointment to us, but more particularly to Dermot Weld and the Aga Khan team.
Yeah, yeah. Just as we were beginning to learn how to spell her name properly and without having to check it. It's a pity, yeah. Look, it's one of them things. She obviously picked up a knock, apparently not very serious, but serious enough to kind of rule her out for most of the rest of the season or to put, you know, to make it a race against time at least for him to prepare her for the Arc. She was impressive at Epsom. And, you know, when we're talking about the three-year-olds in the context of where they stand overall, you know, it's a big hole in that kind of task. You know, you would have loved to see how she would push on. You know, we've got maybe Rosalian, Hatem, Port of Fortuna, and obviously City of Troy kind of flying the flag. She would have been right up there with them. And as the season would have gone on, you would imagine the way Dermot Weld trains, she would have been progressing all the while. So she's a big loss, yeah.
Yeah, big loss as a liar. Will not race again. She's been retired after meeting with a setback. Okay, that then was the racing racecourse element of the show. We'll be looking at the general election in a second. But first of all, here is a fantastic offer for the Racing Post Members Club. Get 50% off your first 3 months in the Racing Post Members Club. As a member, you get access to the digital newspaper exclusively available to members the night before. You'll get daily tips on the likes of Pricewise, Tom Siegel, Robbie Wilders and Paul Keighley. Enjoy award-winning journalism from the industry's best writers and watch replays from all British and Irish racing now available within the Racing Post app. Subscribe today and get 50% off your first 3 months membership. Welcome back to the Front Page and time now to look at the UK general election from last week. Now, fret not, this is not going to be a Clive Myrie, Tom Bradby or Kay Burley dissection of the results from last week, but looking at what it might mean for British racing. We went into the election pretty much knowing what was going to happen by and large, and what we expected was the case. Labour swept to power with a landslide administration and the Conservative Party was battered by the electorate, but also battered was the amount of known support that British racing has in the House of Commons. We knew that was going to be the case to an extent anyway, because recognised supporters of the sport, people like Ben Wallace, Matt Hancock and Nadeem Zahawi from the Conservative Party, and the former Labour Shadow Cabinet Minister, Colin McGinn, they had all stood down before the election. So we knew that they were going. But as a result of losing their seats, we also lost some more recognised supporters from within horse racing, including Sir Philip Davis, Lawrence Robertson and Laura Farris, the Newbury MP. So racing's recognised support in the House of Commons has gone down. In have come a whole host of new Labour MPs as well as existing Labour MPs, and for a sport that generally is thought to have more of a conservative leaning, there have been concerns expressed over recent months about what a Labour government might mean for British racing. Well, perhaps the early signals are that we don't need to be quite as concerned as some might have been. So Keir Starmer was quoted during the election campaign, during Gamblegate, saying that he only bets on the horses when he bets. And he also spoke to the Racing Post prior to polling day, talking about how his wife, Lady Starmer, Victoria Starmer, has a big passion for horse racing. They now famously have a picture of Doncaster Racecourse on their kitchen wall. And he also said, and I quote, "Racing has long been a part of British life. Iconic events like Royal Ascot and the Grand National are watched by millions each year at home and abroad. Racing supports thousands of jobs and makes a significant contribution to our economy." So warm and positive words from the man who is now the Prime Minister, and the man indeed whose wife was one of those who enjoyed racing at Sandown on Saturday. What we don't know yet is what the Labour Party's official position will be on some key matters that will impact the sport, including levy reform, which British Racing thought it had got across the line before the election was called. That proved not to be the case. That matter will need to be revisited, and we'll also need to find out more about what Labour plans to do with the government's plans for gambling regulation and affordability check, which of course were progressing prior to the election. Also to be decided, I suppose, is what happens in relation to some of those members of parliament who are no longer members of parliament, who have expressed interest in some of the key jobs in British racing. We know, for example, that BHA Chief Executive Judy Harrington will be leaving office before the end of the year, and the BHA Chair Joe Saunders-Smith's term of office expires next year, so he will be moving on from the BHA. It has been suggested in reports and rumours that perhaps some now former Conservative MPs could be interested in those BHA offices, BHA positions, and I suggested in my Racing Post Monday column today that at a time when we have a landslide Labour government and we also have a Conservative peer, Dido Harding, taking office this week as Jockey Club senior steward, that perhaps a former Tory MP might not be the right fit for BHA chief exec or BHA chair. We have a new Secretary of State within the DCMS, Lisa Nandy. Her constituency includes Tote HQ. We're trying to hear from her over the coming days, and also we'll be looking to find out who takes on the brief of Sports and Gambling Minister, or perhaps ministers under the new Labour government. That then is what has happened in recent days. Jonathan, we sort of got what we expected. Mm-hmm. Racing had been a little jittery about the prospect of a Labour administration, partly because of the unknown aspects of what it might bring. What's your early take?
Well, I think that's exactly right. It is due to the unknown. Racing has been dealing with a Conservative government for a while now. It perhaps has made, I think falsely made the link between it's a rural sport, therefore we should be reaching out to Conservative MPs. I think that's not actually accurate. There's a lot of Labour MPs who have shown an interest in racing and would be presumably receptive to hearing about it. I think ultimately now we're in a situation where racing has to put its case forward to the new government. I hate to say it's a challenge and an opportunity as in sort of business speak, but I suppose it is. It's really a blank slate now. I think it's naive to expect that levy reform is on the first 100 pages of a Labour government's to-do list, let alone the first one. So perhaps we will have to wait a little bit of time before we actually see where Labour's position is on some of these key issues. It'll be fixing potholes and sorting out junior doctor strikes, I'd imagine, first. But yeah, it's an interesting position. I know that the BHA and British Racing generally has been accused of being slightly slow off the mark in engaging with Labour, given the writing's been on the wall for a while. they would argue that, or the BHA has argued that it's engaged extensively with Labour, and I think that's true. I just think that there's no upper limit to how much you can engage, and there's always more work that could be done on that front. But in terms of what a Labour government will bring, there's no reason at the moment to expect that it will bring anything materially detrimental to racing, only that it can't, racing can't expect sort of handouts or maybe special preferential treatment as perhaps it has in certain instances under the Conservatives. It needs to almost put its case forward and see where the chips land after that, basically, would be my view. And I think a lot's made of the pictures on Keir Starmer's kitchen wall and things like that. Materially, I hate the idea that that would somehow influence policy. I think it needs to be proper, serious forging of links and putting forward an economic case and a cultural case of why we should be supporting British racing, why the government should be supporting British racing.
Yeah, and in terms of those individuals that have gone, we know that British racing had an express policy during that quest to secure levy reform of going to former Tory cabinet ministers and using them to try and exert pressure on Rishi Sunak. Dido Harding was deployed in the same way. British Racing believes that was the right move to make and that it almost got levy reform off the line. If you speak to bookmakers, they say it was a bad move because it almost alienated them and made them think that the whole subject of levy reform had become a matter of how to deal with internal Conservative Party politics. Clearly, that's not an avenue now.
No, back door's locked.
Yeah, exactly. There's no point racing now going to Ben Wallace, Matt Hancock, or even sitting MPs like Priti Patel and trying to put pressure on the government. Racing will need to go down a different avenue when it revisits things like levy reform. But against that, the DCMS is still the same. The officials within the DCMS are still the same. So I suppose racing will be hoping that it can say to Lisa and Andy, look, this work has already been done. All you have to do is pick it up, run with it, and you'll have an instant success.
And I have no doubt that racing will be doing that. It's just a matter of when you almost go to them and start pushing papers under their noses, because I imagine there's the sort of weeks lead straight after the election are going to be reasonably busy and not the time to be kind of trying to jump to the front of the queue, which racing has a bit of a habit of trying to do, as we know.
Yeah.
I think it's just that they'll know what to do. The BHA will have a plan, I'm sure, or I hope, certainly, in terms of continued outreach and in terms of when you almost take those issues to the government. We're a week on, so there's still time.
Yeah, and I suppose another delaying factor might be that Thangam Debonair, who would have expected to become Culture Secretary, was one of the few Labour high-profile figures who didn't actually win her seat on Thursday. So Lisa Nandy's come into a position that she probably wasn't expecting to get, given that Keir Starmer seems to have basically appointed all his shadow ministers to that same role in government.
Yeah, but, you know, my logical head is saying that if racing just puts together its case, this is the contribution we make to the economy, to employment, culturally, this is where we're at, this is what we can offer. I'm hoping that a Labour government would be as receptive as a Conservative government without maybe having quite so many special or privileged links.
Richie, I won't ask you to debate British politics and its links with racing at the moment, but obviously there's loads of big issues at the minute in Ireland in which racing requires help and support from government and politicians. Any new developments there, or are things basically as they were?
As they were at the moment. Look, we have an election coming in the very near future as well, whether it's early in the autumn or early in the new year, or maybe in the middle of the autumn or early in the new year. It looks like the centre will probably hold to some extent here. Obviously, Sinn Féin enjoyed a rise in the polls and at the voting stations over the last few years, but that looks to have receded a little bit going by the polls in recent weeks and months. But even if the centre holds, there's a body of work done to be here as well. Like, racing just does not have the kind of passionate de facto fans, you know, in government that it used to have. I mean, I remember when I came back from England, you could go racing on a day here and you could meet Charlie McCreevy, Joe Walsh, John O'Donoghue. You could meet any of them guys just at the track. at Thurles or Clonmel of a Thursday, they used to go racing. They were racing people. Racing doesn't really have those kind of devoted hardcore supporters in government here in Ireland anymore, I don't think, or they're thin on the ground anyway. And when you look at, like, the gambling regulation bill is obviously an issue that's been on the agenda here over the last couple of years. Like, there was that went from, I think, the committee to the report stage last year, around this time last year. And there was something like 190 amendments discussed, and not one of them mentioned racing. You know, so there was no awareness there of the link between a piece of legislation like that and the impact it could have on racing. Nobody kind of was alert to that danger. And then that's up to the officials as well within HRI and the communications there. You know, you wonder if there was a ball dropped in that regard. So, you know, there's a whole lot of work to be done in this area, I think. You know, I would like to think that even, in the case of the left coming through in Britain, and if the left were to come through more here in Ireland, I don't think it's a given that they would necessarily kind of cease to support racing, if you like. I know when Sinn Féin have been asked about this, for example, in the past, they've always stopped short of saying they would you know, stand down the Horse and Greyhound Fund. They've always been very careful how they choose their words. They know it's a big part of the economy. They're not going to cut the legs out from under the feet. And I would hope that, whatever needs to be done there in Britain, that there will be a lot of support on the Labour side, just the same as there was on the Conservative side, obviously. But there is no doubt turmoil is probably too strong a word. But, you know, things are certainly, you know, it's a time of flux, if you like, I think, in these matters over the last number of years. And I think it's not a given like it used to be before, that you just had this groundswell of support within government for the sport.
Yeah, so parallels there between Britain and Ireland. OK, we have one more story to discuss, and we will do that after this break. Welcome back to the front page. We have one more story to discuss. It is Flutter v ARC, and leading the way on this one is Jonathan Harding.
Yes, this was a blinding story really on Tuesday evening when it emerged that Paddy Power and Sky Bet would not be offering prices on the following evening's card at Bath, which is an unprecedented step. Parent company Flutter Entertainment described it as a commercial decision that was reluctantly taken, essentially reading between the lines, it's an attempt to get Arena Racing Company back to the table on media rights payments. Now, they also reference the fact, this is Flutter Entertainment, reference the fact that it was due to increasing costs associated with certain aspects of our racing proposition. Basically, they're paying a huge amount of money to Arena Racing Company by way of media rights payments. More, or double the levy was their suggestion.
The levy's £105 million, the latest one anyway.
So an enormous amount of money.
Yeah.
And it's this question again of, does that tally with the product they are receiving and its importance commercially to Flutter, which of course has huge interest now in the US. The parent company, this is of Paddy Power, Betfair and Sky Bet. Interestingly, Betfair still offering prices for Bath throughout. So on Wednesday afternoon, and following a nice bit of legal intervention from Arena Racing Company by way of a solicitor's letter, Flutter essentially backtracked. I don't know if there's a better way of putting that, but they essentially U-turned, decided to offer prices at SP only on that meeting. ARC, unsurprisingly, Martin Cruddas, welcomed that decision in a fairly diplomatic statement, I think is putting it mildly. It was quite a conciliatory response from him, when perhaps you would have expected something a bit more inflammatory. And obviously, Flutter were trying to sell their side as well, and they put forward the fact that they stood by their decision and said that there really does need to be a conversation about media rights and about transparency, about the money that flows through the sport. Namely, they put money in through media rights, it goes to racecourses. How does that then filter down into that dreaded word again, racing product, which is, as you'll know and as Richie will know, is a familiar debate and topic among participants in the sport, who are saying all this money is supposed to be coming in, where is it? So a really interesting story. Media rights war, it was billed, and it's not the first one, and I can't imagine it'll be the last one.
No, it feels like this is a battle within a wider war. Mm-hmm. And when you think that this ARC media rights deal, which is thought to be more penal towards bookmakers than the equivalent RMG deal, that deal runs until the end of 2027. Bookmakers clearly don't like it because it seems like Martin Krill has got a really good deal for his partners. We've still got three and a half years
yes.
of this before that expires. Against that, at the same time, you've got this move towards levy reform. During racing's negotiations with bookmakers on levy reform, bookmakers were very keen to try and bring media rights into the equation, using the argument that, look, you want us to pay more for on the levy through levy reform, maybe £25 million a year more, but we're already paying more for media rights on what we believe to be a declining product. So they clearly want media rights to be factored into levy reform negotiations. Levy reform negotiations will at some point have to pick up again this year, while media rights are also being discussed. It's a really, really hot potato, this. And for all that I agree, what Mark's response to Flutter backing down was conciliatory, but I know Martin in his quotes did say, "We're pleased that census prevailed and that Flutter has responded positively to our solicitor's letter of late Tuesday night," just hammering home the fact that they did mm-hmm. make a point, and there was talk of maybe a threat of an injunction against Flutter. Can you see an easy and obvious way out of this?
No.
No.
It's brinkmanship. It's sort of the other side just blinked, that famous line. It's sort of, they're going to be just pushing those boundaries, I think. And yeah, it is all tied in. Levy reform was exactly the same. It was bookmakers going to the bargaining table with racing. And there was, of course, a little bit of pushing it and trying to see, well, can we draw a line in the sand here? Racing would never be receptive to tearing it up completely in the way that bookmakers want. Pushing levy reform is their key priority, and bookmakers, you can understand, I suppose, from a commercial sense, they have shareholders. They're looking at racing as a product, they're looking at betting turnover on racing and seeing it all going south, and they're probably thinking, well, you know, we need to have a real look at how this sport is funded and how the money flows through it. Why don't we simplify everything? It's a completely logical step from their point of view, but you can see why racing would be reluctant to receive less when they're the ones putting on the show. So it's one of those, like, naturally, because of their two interests, you would see them being at odds. But if you take a kind of helicopter view, you think, well, actually, nobody benefits from money not flowing into the sport, and nobody benefits from racing being viewed as a declining product. So hopefully they're able to meet in the middle on levy reform, and whether that encapsulates a kind of broader and more nuanced funding model is worth exploring, isn't it? Because it's not looking particularly promising at the moment.
It's not. And just one last aspect of this before we go to Richie. The transparency angle of all this is interesting too, I think, in the sense that bookmakers on this occasion, Flutter, have made a clear move in recent months to try and highlight what they believe to be a transparency issue, i.e. they're saying, we're paying you all this money in media rights, and based on what Flutter was saying last week, we're looking at way over £200 million a year on that. We're paying you all this money, and we don't think he's actually achieving anything, in the sense that it's not making the racing product any better. We don't think prize money is good enough. There's nothing being spent on marketing. During those levy reform negotiations, bookmakers are very keen that if they were to increase the amount paid in levy, that some of it will go to a designated fund primarily to be used to market the sport. So they're hammering home what they believe to be transparency flaws in media rights money, and they will know that will delight all those racing participants who also say, where the hell is this money going? You know, we don't see any great benefits from it. So I thought that was interesting too. And I wonder if that is I'm sure it's a genuine concern for bookmakers, but again, they will also know that it will carry favour with participants and perhaps use that as an extra means of putting pressure on the racecourse media groups?
Yeah, it's all a negotiation, isn't it? And if you're a racecourse operator who's unwilling to be transparent with the money that comes in and where it's allocated, you're now getting it from both sides, essentially. It's quite interesting dynamic, the bookmakers and participants almost being on the same side on this issue. I know Julia Harrington's spoken previously about the kind of need for greater transparency about how money flows through the sport, and thinking logically and in an ideal world that we don't live in, you think, well, why don't we have complete transparency? Why don't we all sing off the same hymn sheet and sing Kumbaya around the campfire? But that's not really how it works, because racecourses, of course, would say, this is commercially sensitive, we're unwilling. The Jockey Club has shown some willingness to be more transparent, as have independents. We are really talking about Arena Racing Company here, I think, in terms of the transparency issue. Martin Carruthers has been quite clear about not being willing to do that, again, because of the commercially sensitive issue. So yeah, it's a really fascinating topic that's going to rumble on, because racecourses have completely different models. Bookmakers are going to continue to put pressure on for more transparency, as are participants. And you'd imagine racecourses would be fighting to get the best deal possible for their own shareholders. So yeah, this is not one that will go away. And I think this will be this is a battle in a war, I'd suggest.
Yeah. Richie, what was your take on that battle within a war?
Look, it's not new, Lee. As you know, I remember touching on this in a column a couple of years ago when the same similar kind of thing happened over Best Odds Guaranteed, and the bookmakers withdrew Best Odds Guaranteed to try and, you know, make a point. Obviously, that would reduce the yield for race courses at the tracks they were withdrawing the Best Odds Guaranteed. Look, we're talking here about the bookmakers and the race courses, obviously, but there is a Racing Inc., if you like, has to take some responsibility in relation to this as well, because why is it a decreasing product? It's because it hasn't managed to keep up with the Joneses, if you like, in terms of the mainstream sports coverage. Part of that is to do with small fields, uncompetitive racing, a saturated market, too much racing. So racing has to look, Jonathan touched on a helicopter view, so that's part of it as well. The bookmakers will tell you that they feel, bookmaker insiders feel, that racing's value in terms of media rights has peaked over the last few years. And the unspoken threat, if you like, is that when this comes up for renegotiation, I think the current contract runs to 2027, the unspoken threat is that they'd be willing to have racing either kind of deprioritized on their websites or not traded at all, at some meetings. So would they ultimately deliver on that? I don't know. The phrase I used the other day, which I've heard before in relation to this, is that it is a high volume, low margin game for bookmakers these days. And the landscape in relation to betting and media rights in hand over the last 30 years has transformed. I mean, when we walked into a bookie shop when we were young, it was horse racing and nothing else. Now it's everything. And horse racing is there too, but it's fighting for attention in a market that has football, rugby, you name it. It's all there these days in a way that it wasn't before. From a point of view of betting, racing used to be so synonymous with it, and now it's the same for every sport, I think. So, look, it's interesting. There's brinkmanship there. That was the word Jonathan used as well, and I think that is very much it. They tested the water the other day. They got slammed back fairly promptly, but this will run, and it's nowhere near done yet. It'll be interesting to see what way the land lies in a couple of years' time when this comes up for renegotiation.
Yeah, absolutely will. It's a fascinating subject, and it brings us to the end of this week's edition. Three really interesting stories. I have to say, who is the winning story? And not because of recency bias, I am going to say Flutter v Arc, because it has potential huge ramifications over the coming months and years. General election is clearly massive, but let's see how that plays out for racing over the coming months. Great horse City of Troy won the Eclipse of the Park. It's not a great performance, but hopefully he can build on that and prove he is as good as they believe him to be. But this week, John, you have the winning story. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Delightful. That then is the end of this week's edition. Richie, thanks for joining us as ever. You got a good week to look forward to?
Yeah. Look, relatively low key stuff here. My own personal focus at the moment is on this. Actually, you might see the galley head swim jersey on me. It's an annual event I do here, and that's on next weekend, and then I'm off for a week. So, we've got the Irish Oaks to come later in the month, and we've got Galway and so on, but kind of relatively low key on a racing front this week.
Brilliant. Well, Richie, good luck with the water and the swim. John, you're busy this week?
Yeah, busy this week, working on a few things, and then I'll be at Ascot on Saturday, which is always good fun.
Yes, always good to have a day at Ascot. Ascot, York and Newmarket to look forward to this Saturday. Super Saturday is what they called it. They might be discussing next week on the show how super it was. Tom will be in the chair for that. From me and from the rest of us, it's goodbye.